Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan and this is the Conversations Politics podcast. The Royal Commission into Child Sex Abuse has become the centre of a huge and bitter public row over the third appearance of Cardinal George Pell. The Commission has agreed, albeit rather reluctantly, but after accepting medical advice, that Cardinal Pell, who works at the Vatican, can give his evidence by video link from Rome. This has outraged many victims of child sex abuse, and there has been a lot of vitriol towards the Cardinal. Comedian Tim Minchin has composed a controversial song calling on Cardinal Pell to return and describing him as a coward. Crowdfunding quickly raised more than $100,000 to send a group of victims to Rome to observe the video link appearance. Today we're joined by Francis Sullivan, CEO of the Truth, Justice and Healing Council, which was set up by the Catholic Church to oversee its response to the Royal Commission. Francis Sullivan, to get straight to these matters that have been in the news, what are your thoughts about the crowdfunding campaign to send victims to Rome? Will the council provide any support for this move?
You know, what's amazing about the crowdfunding campaign is that in such a short time, it's raised so much money, and it shows you the intense concentration in the community, not only about this specific issue, but about the broader issue of child sex abuse in the Catholic Church. And as a council, we have supported anything that will enable victims to firstly have an opportunity to tell their story, and secondly, for them to be able to bear witness to the whole process. And so the money's been raised. Godspeed if they can get there, if the Royal Commission can provide the arrangements that are suitable so that people can be in the room. If it's not going to be the case, then the monies that have been raised, I understand, will be put towards victims in Ballarat.
When will the Cardinal give his evidence?
Well, it is down for the 29th of February for about 3 days. Because it's in Rome, it's going to be Roman time about 10 o'clock at night, which is going to extend into the early hours of the morning. And for us in Australia, that means about 8 o'clock in the morning through to the afternoon.
The point's been made that Cardinal Pell should give evidence in the same conditions as the victims have had to do. Do you have some sympathy for that view?
Yes, I mean, our position all along was that it would have been better if the Cardinal came to Australia and fronted a public hearing. And he gave every indication that was his intention. Obviously now with medical advice that can't happen. But it's interesting, the people that are at least publicly registering that they want to be in the hearing in Rome would be the people that would be in a public hearing here in Australia. An important point people like Father Brennan and others have made, and it's a good point, is that this is a Royal Commission. We need to get the evidence of the Cardinal. That's the most important part. And that evidence needs to be given in an effective way and in a dignified way befitting of a Royal Commission. So I'm assuming this is Friday before the start of the Ballarat hearings next week. The Royal Commission is still trying to work out how they can replicate appropriately what would be a public hearing room in Rome. They don't have jurisdiction in Rome. They're going to need the cooperation of some organisation. I understand the Cardinal's legal team is cooperating fully as possible. He's prepared to go wherever in order that all of these needs and the balance of those needs can be met.
Do you think the Cardinal should have made more effort to get here? For example, he could have taken a staged plane trip.
Well, that was put actually in the hearings to Justice McClellan. And I think Justice McClellan, after reading the medical advice, which I haven't got in front of me or have read at all, he was pretty clear that that wasn't a real option. So it seems that the Cardinal wanted to come and at the last minute had to make this decision on medical advice, not just from one doctor, I understand. And I'm picking that up from the public hearing, the directions hearing.
The feeling against him has really become quite exceptional in the last few days, or the campaign against him, and it's become quite ugly indeed. Do you think that he's brought a lot of this on himself, or do you think that this has escalated into some mob feeling?
It's a crescendo. It's a built up. It's a build up of the angst, the anger, the hurt surrounding the whole issue of child sex abuse and the history of the Catholic Church, which has been a history of cover-up and a history of distrust. The lack of credibility in the Church felt across the community, not only by Catholics but the community more broadly, it has come to a crescendo. Cardinal Pell is a lightning rod for that discontent. And I think to many people who can look at this more dispassionately, they will see this inevitable bubbling over of reaction in the community. It comes from many sources. Now, some people have issue with the Cardinal directly. They've raised questions in the Royal Commission that he needs to answer. And that's why the most important thing here is getting the evidence. There are others who have an issue with the Catholic Church more broadly, and because he's a cardinal and because he's been a senior person in Australia for so long, they're focusing their attention on him in what is really a more diffuse set of issues. So it's a very complex cocktail of reaction.
What did you feel when you heard that mentioned song?
I personally felt depressed. I thought, it's come to this, that now we can have the Catholic Church parodied in the popular media. The reaction from the community was so positive towards that song, it just showed me as a Catholic how far we have fallen in the eyes of so many people. And what's depressing about it, there are so many people in the Catholic Church that do so much for people, for the down and outs and for people in healthcare and for people in education and for ordinary families. And to think that it is all being now bundled up in this a visceral reaction by the community now to where the Catholic Church is in sex abuse. That's what it felt like to me, and I felt really, really depressed.
To move now to broader issues, as CEO of the body responsible for crafting the Church's response to the Commission, how difficult has it been to reach unified positions on the various issues?
Well, better than I thought it would be. I mean, it's a very diverse animal, the Catholic Church. It's got 189 religious orders and 40 separate dioceses with their own bishop. And, you know, that's difficult at the best of times to get a unified position. But I've been surprised on the resolve from all of those leaders to try and find solutions about the future that are going to mean that the Church is more credible, more transparent, more accountable, that they want to do some radical changes that send the signal that for once victims come first. Now, that philosophy has really bitten into the leadership, and at a practical level, it hasn't been that hard to get unanimous support for the policies.
Do you think, though, there's still a fair bit of defensiveness about the Church's reaction or in the Church's reaction?
Yes, it's inevitable. The Church is a conservative animal when it comes to institutional politics. It's highly protective of its position and its contribution in various sectors of the human economy. So by instinct, it's cautious and conservative. Now, that instinct plays out in a protectiveness and a defensiveness in its public image. And it's taken many decades for the Church leadership to realise that the defensiveness has been part of the problem, that putting the institution and its image first, avoiding public scandal, was their strategy, and now we're left with the biggest scandal in their history. So I think the residue remains in some quarters, but I will say this, that the senior archbishops who effectively are in control to a person have been 100% behind our strategy.
Nevertheless, there's been criticism of the poor responses from some church officials regarding what they knew and their lines of responsibility. What sort of advice is your council providing to the church to ensure that the truth about matters is told?
Well, a number of things. Firstly, we help prepare for the Royal Commission the documents and the materials it wants. Those documents and materials become the content of the questions put back to the church leaders. In other words, we are transparent in what is available, and then under oath, the leaders need to be as transparent back in their responses. And so we saw in the recent Melbourne hearing that retired Bishop Connors, Bishop Finnegan, Archbishop Hart, all in their evidence, opened the lid on how the church in its curial meetings, they're the meetings of bishops, dealt with issues of child sex abuse. And Bishop Connors was very honestly talked about his failures in not pressing the then Archbishop to do more with the information they had. That's an example, and that's the result of our policy. It's not where our policy is not about individuals going into the Royal Commission and in a sense being half cooperative. They go in to be transparent and to be open, even at their personal expense.
Recently, of course, we've had the film Spotlight, which has shown what happened in the United States and the difficulties of getting to the truth there. Do you think that that film has resonated among senior figures in the church?
Definitely. From my discussions with senior people...
What are they saying about it?
Well, it hits the mark. It is what it is. It happened this way. It's almost like anywhere in the world where the Catholic Church has dealt with child sex abuse, they've dealt with it off the same roadmap.
Which is extraordinary when you think about
it. It's absolutely extraordinary, which tells you that the way the Catholic Church dealt with child sex abuse is germane to its culture. It's a culture where the residue of the medieval structure still exists, where power and organisational control determines who says what when, who gets the information, and how individuals can be intimidated in the system not to speak up. It's that culture that actually, in its claustrophobic nature, shuts things down and becomes extraordinarily protective of the institution. That's what Spotlight showed. And it showed that investigative journalism was the only way it came out. And when you look at the Australian experience, that's exactly the same thing. The media attention, the media persistence has basically led to this Royal Commission.
But even if there are structures put in place to deal with this issue, how can anyone be confident that the wider cultural nature of the church is changing, will change?
I don't know if you can be confident about that, because it's such an entrenched culture and it's such a conservative, cautious organisation. But it's interesting under the new Pope. He is setting up a image of the church far different from being a bulwark in society. He wants it to be an engaged participant of society. It's a very different approach. And with that different approach comes a different result. It's not about the church being apart from society. It's not about the church standing back and casting judgment on society. It's about a church that says, together with our common humanity, we can find the good, the true and the beautiful.
But popes come and go, and it's a very political process, the choosing of them, a bit like party leaders indeed,
yes.
Except they don't seem to get overthrown. And this pope has his critics, and one of them, of course, is Cardinal Pell. So in the longer run, there are no guarantees that this culture will not just revert even when progress is made.
The long history of the Catholic Church demonstrates that ultimately the church, albeit slowly, adapts to the demands of society, and one of the strongest indications at the moment in the Western world is that the participation of Catholics in the church by way of regular practice is declining at a very rapid rate. People are voting with their feet. And what are they voting about? They're voting about a sense of relevancy. It's not just the sex abuse scandal. In other words, the church needs to speak again to people's lives and make it relevant to their lives in the Western world, okay? In the developing world, it's a different scenario. And so for the church and its leadership to actually address that, they have to understand what about themselves as a church? What about ourselves as a church? Do we need to open to society, not just be judgmental of it? And there are many issues like that.
But is there an incentive for the people in control to do that? Because even if they've got a smaller constituency, they retain the power. And of course, as you said, in the developing world, there are quite conservative attitudes. Even the congregations are quite conservative.
Yes. Well, that's exactly the point, isn't it? It is about those in leadership leading for what the whole show is meant to be about, not for themselves and not for entrenching sectional interests of the church. That's the whole point, and that's why people like the current Pope are challenging the structures, challenging the modus operandi, and putting forward a new vision. And of course, he will only be there for some time. In the Catholic Church circles, they say this is how God works.
To come back to the Commission, there's been a great deal of attention on the Catholic Church, some attention, of course, on other institutions. But do you think that the degree of attention that's been given to the Catholic Church means that the problem of child sex abuse in other institutions might not be fully and adequately probed by the Commission?
I think it's very likely that the Commission will run out of time to
probe. It's only got, what, another...
Yeah, in its public hearings, probably at best another year, and then a report by the end of 2017. I think it will run out of time to adequately probe all the institutions. So the sense you get is it's doing a litmus test of various institutions, but it's quite clear they feel a strong obligation to do quite a comprehensive examination of the Catholic Church. In his public statements, he's made it clear that the private sessions of the Royal Commission reveal about over a third of people who turn up to those private sessions have been abused in the Catholic Church. That means the Catholic Church is the single largest grouping of institutions in Australia that delivers child sex abuse. That's a harsh reality. It's tough to take, but it's a reality. I don't believe the Royal Commission is overemphasising its concentration on the church. Unfortunately, it's about in accord with the history.
Where are things up to on the national redress scheme to provide compensation to victims, both at a state level and federal level, what a government's doing?
I think it's very tentative. I think it's now in the hands of governments. The recommendations have gone forward from the Royal Commission. The most recent indication came from the Turnbull government, where they are in a Delphic press release basically washing their hands of responsibility to deliver a national redress scheme, placing it in the precinct of the states, territories and major institutions. Now, institutions like the Catholic Church are committed to participating in a redress scheme. It'll cost us over 10 years about $1 billion, more than a number of states combined. So we're there. Some states, like South Australia, have consistently resisted the idea.
What's the argument from them?
I think it is that the Premier in South Australia believes they've already put in place a redress scheme. Why put in another one? Why, in some sense, does another scheme in any way improve on the prospects of what this one could be? Because theirs has been good enough. Now, the reality in South Australia is that very few people have accessed it compared to how many are projected to access it in the future.
And where's the money come from to pay those people?
The money comes from the institution in which you're abused. So if you're abused in the Catholic Church pays. If you were abused in the Families Department of South Australia, they pay. If you're abused at the Salvos, they pay. So the major funding of this comes from institutions where people have been abused. The big social issue that Malcolm Turnbull and Mark Baird and every other leader has to front is that individuals have been abused in institutions in Australia for decades. They live with the trauma daily. They have no redress given to them so far. We've got the most expensive Royal Commission in Australia's history recommending that we go down this pathway. And if our leaders can't pick up that issue and deal with it as a major social issue, then they're not worth their salt.
So what should Malcolm Turnbull's response be?
Malcolm Turnbull should have taken on this at it personally and said, I go to the next COAG meeting. I will sit at dinner with my colleagues from states and territories. We will thrash out how to have a consistent redress scheme across this country so that victims, no matter where you were abused or when you were abused, you have the same entitlement to redress. Secondly, that if you were abused in Western Australia, but now you live in South Australia, you don't have to travel to WA to get your redress. This is how a country responds to a social problem. Let's not make it a problem between treasuries.
Why do you think he hasn't responded in a more robust fashion?
I think the Commonwealth is trying to keep away from any expenditure. They ran places where children were abused. They oversaw immigration programs where people came from overseas into orphanages and they were abused. The Commonwealth has exposure here. The Commonwealth also has a leadership role with regard to children's services in conjunction with the states. And I believe that they haven't examined in depth what is the moral response of governments.
Appearing before the Commission has obviously taken a big toll on many victims, even though it's helped them in terms of wanting to get out their story. And even one of the commissioners took some leave because of the emotion of the whole process. What's been the impact on you personally of what you've heard?
Well, it's an extraordinary grueling process on a number of levels, just physically getting around the place, making myself available to victims, either in group meetings or personally and other meetings generally, talking with individuals about the impact for the church. So at that level, I mean, that's tiring. It's quite corrosive at a personal level about your belief in your church. It's been really hard to accept the fact that people who have committed themselves to a moral life have actually dealt with this in such a, predictably self-interested way. And that it's taken so long for individuals who have been abused to feel they're getting anywhere in having their situations addressed and feeling with them the inertia of a big system against them, in itself is depressing. I mean, I'm fortunate. I will leave this job when it's done. Individuals who've been abused wake up every morning with their history. It's a different story. And in a sense, I feel guilty about that.
But you retain your faith in the church?
I retain my faith in my sense of God. I don't have faith in the church with regard to divine things. I see the church like I am, you know, fumbling along and seeking something. That's what I feel deep down, whether it's, you know, through an intellectual pursuit or a deeper sense of connection with humanity or a sense of leading a life of happiness with others. There are lots of ways of describing that journey. I have never lost any faith in that process. I just feel, in a sense, still angry that here we are in 2016 addressing the issues of 1960, and yet there is still such a an enormous struggle to get this done.
Francis Sullivan, thank you for talking with us today. That's all from the Conversations Politics podcast for now. Thanks to my producer, Pat Hutchins. We'll be back with another interview soon. This is Michelle Grattan.